Hello, guys, and welcome to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 34. How are you guys doing? We're your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
And I'm melting.
Oh, my God.
It's hot.
Super hot. Big mood.
Yes. I'm sure those people that live in Arizona or New Mexico and Texas are just like, get over it, you sissies. But I, this humidity and this heat is just so, for me, debilitating. Like,
yes, no, absolutely. I agree. I completely agree. Going to sleep is a hassle.
Yes.
The ants are a hassle.
Yes, oh my gosh. We have been
attacked by
ants. Yes, attacked by ants.
We're at war, definitely. Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to clean the podcast room was because I can't stand it when one little one gets on your leg or on your arm and you're like, ugh. And then forever, any little movement of any kind of, like, hair on your body, you feel like it's an ant. I hate that. Yes, it's very hard.
All the mosquitoes, all the insects.
The fleas! Oh, my gosh, when I walk through the grass outside, I get bit by fleas all over my ankles.
Really?
Yes.
All the insects from hell are basically making a resurgence, and all I can say is that they can go to bed.
That is an awesome segue into my On My Radar, and I'll remember that later.
That's crazy. But you're right. I mean, there was a point, I think one of the hottest days, I was sitting there and there was a fly buzzing and I'm like, how are you still alive? How are you flying? Like, you should be dead like me right now. We managed to go to the beach, I think it was on Sunday.
Yeah.
And everybody had the same idea. And one of the things was I do everything in my power to make it as pleasant as possible because my brother hates the beach.
Mm.
And everybody in the family hates, like, wandering around for parking. I did everything that I could. I packed the car with everything, food, snacks, water, whatever, beer. And the only thing I was like, please find parking. So what I did is I dropped them off with all the stuff, and then I parked and I walked myself. Because I wanted it to be as pleasant as possible. It was the only family, like, the whole family went. So it was a lot of fun.
Which beach?
We went to the Huntington Dog Beach.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The Dog Beach.
Yeah. It was great.
I always like seeing your pictures and videos of Taffy at the beach.
Oh, yeah. She was just like, she dipped in once and she was done. And I tried to take her back in the water and she started kind of walking away from me. So I knew that.
She was not having it at all.
But it's really fun. A lot of dogs come over to your little area because we have two umbrellas. So we put them up, and the dogs love the shade. So all the other people's dogs come and they sit in our little area. It was fun. It was great. My brother got some beers for us to try, and so we had little tasters. It was good. It was a great day. Although I did, I always do this. I overdo it. Like, I feel like I want to live in the moment as much as possible. And so the waves were being really, like, aggressive at a certain time of the day. And I wanted to go under a big wave.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I actually caught it where it broke. So it broke on top of me, and it dragged me. And then my boob popped out. Yes. Yes. And, I mean, I'm thinking, it's so small. How the fuck did it pop out, right? But the thing is I have sloped shoulders, and usually I try to get crisscross back, so racer back, so I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
I didn't, because this bathing suit was so comfortable, I compromised the razor back for the whole swimsuit.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, it's not going to happen. It has two straps. I'm fine. But no, it happened. I flashed an old guy. My nephew said, Sarah, what the heck were you trying to do? And this one lady was like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay.
So there were witnesses.
The beach was completely full.
But the only
people that made eye contact with me that couldn't avert my gaze after it happened were these three people. I was like, but I immediately, like, tucked it back in, but it's too late.
It's been seen.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, and then I forgot, you know, I was so focused on my back not getting burned, so I asked my nephew and Frank to, you know, put the stuff on the back, the sunscreen, that I completely forgot to put in the front. So I have these tan lines now in the front. It's kind of funny. But yeah, I completely forgot. How do you forget? I don't know. I forgot. I was too excited. I just wanted to go in the water and I forgot to put it in the front. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. But I want to hear about you.
Flashing strangers at the beach.
Yes, I know. I thought I would never have that problem. I thought for sure that would be something that would never happen to me. And it did. It totally did. Yeah. Left boob out.
How can I beat that cheap mayo?
No, but I mean, you went to the expo. Tell us all about that.
Oh, yes.
Anime
Expo. Yeah, okay. So I went to Anime Expo, and for those of you who don't know, Los Angeles hosts Anime Expo that has been going on for about 27 years now.
Oh, wow, that long?
Yeah, it's been going on for quite a while.
Oh, I had no idea.
And it is the largest, basically the largest gathering of manga and anime promotional stuff in the entire West Coast. So it's basically the San Diego Comic-Con of anime and manga. And it was so fucking packed. I remember when, because I started going around 2010. Mm-hmm. I was still in high school. I took my little sister with me, which was a mistake on my part. That was when they still weren't very wasn't regulated a lot. So there was some shit.
Wow. Okay.
And let's just say, what is anime most known for in the pop culture world?
Oh. What? I don't know.
Hentai.
Oh. No. Every time I hear that, it reminds me that I need to get my hands on some.
Okay. I might have some recommendations. But anyways. So this was my 8th year going. I actually missed a year because I was in the hospital, but I bought the passes, so I just gave them to my siblings, and I was just like, attend for me in spirit, also buy me art. But it was a lot of fun, and I was, it was really cool because the last panel on Sunday, I still had to go to work,
oh, yeah.
But there was still enough time, they had a diversity in voice acting panel. And
wow.
The people who were on there were Anjali, who is the voice actress for Symmetra, from the video game Overwatch. Carolina Ravaza, who is a Colombian and who I absolutely adore, and she's the voice actress for Sombra. And Keith, who is a black man, and he is a voice actor for Torbjorn and a bunch of other stuff. He's very prolific. He's super well known. But he is one of the few black men that is in that industry. And it was just really cool listening to them and what they're saying, because most of the stuff that they do is voice acting, but Anjali does acting as well. Carolina is still kind of like a breakout voice actress. She's trying to get her hands on more, so she's like auditioning and stuff like that. And a lot of the stuff that they said was stuff that we'd said too. It was a matter of, like, you know, creating content for yourself so that you can put it out there.
Yeah.
Even if it's small and stuff like that. And another thing that they said is that is to be there, to have your voice heard and all that stuff. And that in the end, sometimes you might not get a job because it's very much an industry thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that in voice acting, it's a lot easier to be a person of color and be cast into a role because of the whole, like, no one knows how you look like unless they actively mm-hmm. are looking for how you look like. And so it's easy, but also they also said the fact that if you limit yourself in the roles that you think are possible, that also limits to the number of auditions that you will get.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool. It was pretty interesting. And it's not something that they'd ever done before. Also, like, a panel like that.
Yeah.
At Anime Expo. Mm-hmm. Because Anime Expo is very much a, you know, Japanese manga and anime stuff like that. But there's also this problem in the anime and manga industry where there's a lot of idealization of the white figure.
Yeah.
So basically.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a very, like, kind of untouched territory because not a lot of people talk about it, and I think that's what they kind of wanted to stay as.
Mm.
So this panel was super, super interesting and super cool, and it was very well attended as well because simply the fact that there are, at least in my experience, there are no more diehard fans for anime than black men. Black men fucking love Dragon Ball.
Oh, and yes, absolutely, yes.
They're out there. They love it. They adore it.
Mm-hmm.
There's it's just that I feel like there are more black anime fans than there are white anime fans.
Mm,
but the ones that you see the most, or at least it's here true in LA,
mm-hmm.
that I can see it. That's honestly true. So that was an interesting panel, and I saw that when I was at the panel because there was the audience was predominantly black men who were there for Keith and stuff like that. But also there was a lot of Latinas. There was a lot of other Asian ethnicities is there as well. And of course there was white people there as well,
sprinkled
throughout. But it was predominantly people of color.
Wow.
And that was really, really cool, and it really hammered the fact that stuff that you wouldn't think about it just because it's not like super mainstream, or well, anime is pretty mainstream now, but it used to not be.
Right. I know.
But that the audience is that strong, and you just don't know that they exist, and that it is a problem that people should talk about. And so that was really cool, and that was really cool to see. But Anime Expo was a lot of fun, except until I heard, and oh my god, okay, so, because Anime Expo is great, and I love it, and sometimes, starting, about 5 years ago, I kind of, you know, the San Diego Comic-Con thing you told me about, like, how you're not really enjoying yourself anymore, but
yeah,
then once you're there,
right.
You are kind of like, oh, this was fun.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
kind of been me with Anime Expo. I always say, it's like, oh, I'm not gonna go this year, like, oh, F that, I'm not even into the anime anymore, like that. That's a lie, I still am.
you know why we know it's a lie? Because she came to work on Sunday with a t-shirt that said, Weeaboo Trash.
I bought that. No, you don't understand. I bought that on day one. Like, the first day I was there, I saw it. I gasped audibly because it was in bright fluorescent pink.
Yeah.
And the font was very pretty. Some people couldn't read what it was,
yeah.
but I saw it immediately. And I was just like, I need that shirt. I want it. And I bought it. And it was the best purchase of the entire convention.
Did you gasp in Spanish?
Yes. I was like, you see, that's the Spanish.
You
gasp.
Know what's funny? Uh-huh. Some girls came into the new shop because Heidi Ho is moving. We are no longer located at our Lincoln address. We're now at 412 Broadway. For those of you in the Santa Monica area, come check out our new location. But some girls came in, and they were in the manga section, and they were like, gasping and being like, oh my gosh, and oh my gosh, every time they saw a new title that they recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them that we were having a big sale at the other location, and that there was some manga, not a lot, but there was some, but that everything was 75% off. And I said, and just so you know, the girl that's working over there, she is a self-proclaimed weeaboo trash. And they started laughing. They're like, let's go right now.
Oh, you guys.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that you told them that. Because we talked. And I don't think they wanted to bring it up.
That's funny.
But, but no, it was a lot of fun. But anyways, what I was saying is that I didn't learn about this till later, but then I realized that I had passed the booth. But and Anime Expo has been getting a lot of slack because it was that one year when they had moved Artist Alley
yep.
to the parking lot.
I remember.
And they didn't turn on the AC
yeah,
for
people
the
were passing out.
So people were passing out because of the heat.
Yeah.
Oh,
they,
my God.
Imagine if that was, like, this year. Oh,
no.
My gosh.
That's
so
horrible. So they fixed that since, I think it was, like, 2 or 3 years ago. And the AC is on full blast over there. And so Artist Alley is very well ventilated and stuff like and all that. So they fixed that. But the thing is that they put restrictions on the artist and what they can display or what they can have.
Oh, I see.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, like,
and which I was like, okay, yeah, like you wanna be known as a family thing kind
right.
of. And it's true because
Okay, I was in 10th grade. I wasn't even 15 yet, and I took my 10-year-old little she wasn't even 10. Well, she's 7 years older, so I'm 7 years older. So, Jesus fuck, how old was she? She was like in third grade. Never mind. But and there, like I said, there had been like some explicit artwork that she had seen and that I had seen that I probably shouldn't have seen at that age. But I was just like, okay, I get it. You want to be like super like friendly and stuff like that. But it wasn't until later that I learned that these restrictions were like super strict. Like you couldn't have people kissing. At
what?
All.
Really?
Yeah. And I was just, yeah, like, in the display. Like, you could sell the artwork in a binder and stuff like that, but you couldn't have it out on display. Mm-hmm. Turns out that in the exhibit hall, they had a VR, sexual experience.
Oh, wow! Wow, I want to do that. That would be so cool.
For men.
Aww.
What do you mean, for men? It meant that the people doing VR were fucking a blow-up doll. So the women couldn't get any on that
yeah.
stuff. So first of all, equality bitches, make something for women too.
Yes.
Second of all, people were actually having sex in that booth. They were jacking.
Gasp in Spanish.
Yeah, they were jacking. They were basically jacking it to the blow up doll.
Oh my gosh.
In that booth. And the booth was cordoned on and everything, and it was explicitly like an 18 plus, you had to
right,
show ID
yeah, uh-huh.
kind of thing. But you're having sex there.
Yeah.
That's...
Wow.
And you want to be known as a family show, and you're putting restrictions on all your artists, and then turning right back around and doing that
yeah.
in the exhibit hall? I was just like, oh, hell no.
Was it one of those new dolls that are kind of like a... They look kind of realistic? The kind of rubber?
No, it's a VR, so, like, you have the VR headset and stuff, mm-hmm. and there's, like, a plastic blow-up doll and stuff like that that I guess, like, is connected to it that is supposed to, like...
Simulate sensation.
Simulate sensation and
oh,
stuff like that.
Snap.
Wow. Yeah.
They should have something for women, damn it.
Yeah, I know,
there.
Right?
Dental
but, like...
Dam.
So
yes,
I didn't know about
there.
This until afterward, and then that's when I realized that I had passed this booth and that there was a crowd of people. So basically, while you were jacking to it, there was a crowd of people
watching
you. Yes,
wait, watching you.
Yes,
I'm out.
They're
no.
watching you because it was like a real you're supposed to do it, but it's supposed to be also like a display like how this is works. So you could volunteer to do it, but you're literally and these people were literally having sex.
Wow.
In a booth at Anime Expo.
Wow.
And that is not fucking okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's alright. It's all, like, it's, like, I wouldn't have objected to it, because for one, if there was a similar thing for women, but two, if you're gonna have this rated, like, 18 plus section, put it somewhere else. Not in the exhibit hall where
right.
you're supposed to have all this family-friendly stuff as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
So. Jen is very upset right now.
I'm very upset. I forgot how
if
upset
you guys
I was.
Could see her face. I have to say that if I were have been there, if I were to have been there, I would have stood in line. Just to see. I see these things being passed around on Facebook all the time. I'm like, oh my gosh. And like, there's this one where this older man has the VR thing on,
mm-hmm.
and like, there's a, you can see what he's seen, and there's this woman that's coming and like rubbing on him, and the video is showing that he clearly is so into it,
mm-hmm.
that like, his whole body movement and his facial expression and everything, I mean, he is into it. And I think that's so like, I think it's so interesting. And like, it's the next stage of self gratification.
Like,
I'm so interested in that. But yes, I don't want anyone to watch. Well, I mean, in that environment,
yeah.
I don't need anybody watching.
Like,
yeah,
like
exactly.
That's just the thing. Is like, it was in a booth.
Yeah,
people were watching you.
Yeah,
people posted video of it. That's how I found out.
Share that video because I want to see it.
Oh my god, yeah.
I would have stood in line like Kristen, but yes, I would have been upset. I would want something for females, and
mm-hmm.
I would definitely want it to be like not where everybody was watching.
Yeah,
Like, I'd be for that. I'd be for that.
So people are watching it. Like, if you had your own, like, private section, I would, I'm not going to lie, yeah, I would have done it too. But it's not, the most thing that hits me is the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
I understand that.
It's the hypocrisy.
You know what would be so cool? If they could announce that they're going to have it and just bring your own vibrator. I think that would work for me. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. We've really gone off the rails right now.
It's been a while. But that was Anime Expo.
It was interesting. It was.
It was, had its highs and lows. Game over. Oh my God.
What about you, Kristen? What's going on with you? Besides the move.
Yes, my life has been totally overtaken with the move of Heidi Ho Comics from one spot to the next, but we are somewhat set up in the new spot. I mean, we're up and fully functional and running. It's more things like, hey, where's the clipboard with the da-da-da-da, or hey, what did we do with the toilet paper, or where, I mean, so it's that kind of small little stuff, so there's still, like, some infrastructure that we're working on, but I'm, like, on my 16th day straight of working, and it's starting to take a toll, so I'm actually looking forward to having some time off, even though I know in my mind I'm going to Comic-Con, and, like, you have to mentally prepare for that stuff.
And if you can physically prepare as well. Like, I was talking to you and Eddie about how, I think, Jen, you went to work and you went to Anime Expo, right?
Yeah.
Like, on the same day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's not possible. And I'm like thinking, wait, I used to be young.
She's young.
So I was like, I used to do that, but you forget.
Yeah. Because
it's really exhausting. I mean, the crowds, the heat, the food, the lack of food, the lack of, you know, water. It's just all those things.
Yeah.
And then the smells.
Oh, I'm very familiar with it. I'm ready. I basically like bottled up all my Anime Expo preparedness, and I'm ready. I'm waiting to put it back in effect for San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, it was a nice little primer.
Nice.
So yeah, that's all I'm doing. I haven't watched any movies. All the big summer blockbusters have not been anywhere near me at all. I haven't had any time to go see Incredibles. I haven't seen Ant-Man. I haven't seen what was the other one we were talking about?
One of the Jurassic.
Yes, haven't seen any of those. And I am just exhausted from this heat, so I haven't done anything exciting. I really haven't had any time. I am finding time to fit in Bachelorette. If you guys don't know this about me, I am a complete reality TV, like, crazy person. I love Bachelorette. I love Big Brother. I love Bachelor in Paradise. I used to watch all the, like, crazy VH1 when they had, like, when they had all those, like, dating shows. I love all those things. So anyway, I have found time to watch those late at night. But that's it. I'm saving up my emotional, physical, and monetary monetary assets to go to San Diego next year. Or next week, sorry.
Yeah. Next year, too.
Yeah.
Makes sense. No, I completely forgot about the monetary status. Yeah. I'm actually going to go Uber this weekend just to have enough money for Comic-Con, so.
Oh, my God.
Well, the fact that I've worked 16 Day Street had that in mind.
Oh.
Because I knew that I needed to save money.
Exactly.
To spend money.
I would have had more, but then I went to Anime Expo, and I spent so much. So much. Oh, my God, I spent so much.
And now it's time for Chisme de la Semana. Jen, take it away.
So, this is Jen, and I have three pieces of hot chisme this time. So, first of all, let's break it to everybody nicely. And maybe I'm a little bit late. Some people might already know this. This was kind of announced July 4th. Or maybe they missed it because it was the 4th of July. but the IT producers are remaking Child's Play.
What?
We're getting a new Chucky movie. Okay.
Bride of Chucky, oh my god, that was a freaking hilarious ride. I remember going to the movie theater to see that. It was it was so funny.
It's not supposed to be funny.
I know. I don't know. I don't, maybe, I don't know. At that point, Bride of Chucky, I think maybe they were cashing in on the laugh.
That's true. That's true.
So I first watched Bride of Chucky as a kid. And as a kid, that shit is still kind of scary.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know how it happened, but then I saw, I think it was like a movie marathon that was happening in one of the channels, and my parents weren't there. Uh-oh. Or they were just unaware. But then I saw Bride of Chucky, and then the next day, I think I saw Child's Play, and I was even more traumatized. I know. It's been kind of announced, and the IT producers, who are David Katzenberg and Seth Graham Smith. And when I say IT producers, like the people who made it, like
right.
The new one,
the most recent one,
one that just came out,
the cool one,
the hip one.
Wait, where did that come out on? Was that Netflix or
no? It was a regular movie.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I was trying to remember where I went to go see it. Yes, it was a regular movie. And they're working on the second one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where they're grown up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so the second one, I think, is already being filmed.
I hope so. I'm intrigued to see what happens.
So that's exciting. And they have Norwegian director Lars Klevberg, who directed Polaroid, is signed up for the script, along with Kung Fury 2 writer Tyler Burden Smith. So that's that should be interesting. I mean I'm down for watching that. I very much liked it. It was super cool.
It was
cool,
really cool.
And it was super creepy and scary, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Like the old movie has its charm too, and it scared the bejesus out of me as a kid as well. Don't ask me how I ended up watching that one either.
I was a freshman in college, and I wouldn't take a shower after that because of the drain scenes.
I actually, my mom said that for a while that, because she didn't learn that I watched that movie until afterwards. And then, because I refused to take a shower, and I was like 6-7 years old.
Yeah.
After seeing the movie. And I refused to take a shower, and because I wouldn't take a shower, my little
your brothers and sisters,
wouldn't take a shower, and so it was a whole fiasco. And then she finally asked, and she's like, "There's a clown in this."
Because there's a clown in it. You don't take a shower, but then if you take a bath, you are then putting yourself at risk for Freddy to come
exactly.
at you.
Exactly. Yeah. I was just thinking that. Uh-huh. Yeah. I wouldn't take a bath because of that. I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh,
I used to get free as a kid. I was in sixth grade when that movie came out.
Oh,
and
my God.
Or I don't know when it came out, but when I saw it. Yeah. On HBO. And I am not lying. I did not sleep for 2 weeks. As a sixth grade child, like I'm assuming at some point I slept a couple, but I could not fall asleep. I was so scared in my room with the blankets over me, all the shadows on the wall. Oh my! And I had a waterbed at the time. And so the waterbed was like, in my mind, it was the same as being in the bathtub, that he was going to come through the water. Oh my gosh. Oh. I don't know how I could not have been a little neurotic kid.
Oh my gosh.
Which
reminds me, when the Ring came out.
Oh,
and I saw that one too. Thanks to courtesy of my cousins and bootleg movies. But after I saw The Ring, I would not watch any unnamed VHS tapes. Yeah. Because I was just like, what if it's something forbidden and then I die?
That's awesome.
Yeah, and there was a lot. There was a lot of unnamed VHS.
Yeah, back in the day. Yeah.
So, but I know that the Ring is also getting a remake.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's also getting a remake, and that one should be interesting because I think the whole watch a film VHS thing is very much a thing that's firmly set in the past.
Yes.
I don't know what they're gonna do with it.
They did a. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I saw a kind of a sequel, kind of, where they were trying to study what happened, the effects with the videotape, but they actually had it in a USB flash drive, and there was actually a study group that was sending it via email.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that's how it was spreading in this era. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
but even then, like, USB sticks are kind of...
Even those are, yeah.
Yeah, even those are, that's so 10 years ago.
Wait, what do we use now?
Your phone.
Yeah.
Your phone can have up to, not only just your phone, like, this phone is 64 gigabytes, and even then, I think that's too little.
Yeah, mine is, like, 130-something.
Yeah, like most phones are now going, like, to, I think they're gonna, like, phase out the 64 gigabyte ones soon, and just make, like, 100-something. And
after I ran out of space with my photos one too many times, I'm like, that's it. I am not suffering like this anymore. Mm-hmm. And the next time I went to go get upgrade my phone, I was like, give me the biggest you have. And that's not even the biggest anymore. You're right. There's tons that are bigger.
Yeah. And so, like, and now with, like, Google Cloud and everything.
That's true. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So, like,
I Google Doc people all the time these days. And yeah, I just downloaded Google Doc on the app on my phone. And I was, like, astounded at how easy it was to edit the document on my phone, even though my phone was tiny and stuff, but, like, the word processing functions on my phone, I was like, oh my god, this has changed my life.
Yeah.
So, I'm a little late to this show, but I do still use USB sticks.
Yeah, like, every once in a while, maybe when I used some while I was at UCLA, because for some reason all colleges seem to be, like, a couple of years behind on the times, even, like, the most up-to-date ones. And because I could not send, I could not, basically, my printer wasn't working, and my UCLA account wasn't accepting emails from outside accounts, so I had to download onto a USB, go down to the friggin' library, insert it into one of their computers, then complain because their computer systems weren't up to date and could not take
couldn't read it.
And then they updated it, downloaded my doc, and then printed it. It was a whole fucking fiasco, and I was just like, I'm never doing this again. I'm fixing my printer, and it's been fixed. But like that was probably something with the dark web. I know there's a movie coming out about that too, about some people finding a laptop.
When I hear references to that, to the dark web, I'm always wondering, how do people know where to go? Like, how do you get into? I mean, that's too much of a conversation to get into, but I always wonder that. And then I'm like, but I don't want to go searching because then I want the FBI knocking on my door.
Google dark web.
No, oh my god.
Alexa? Is the dark web.
Oh my god.
That's hilarious.
No, that's pretty funny. But that, anyway.
So this all from the Chisma that Chucky is going
to be remade. We got into horror movies. Okay, the second piece of Chisma, we're only on number two, is that Aaron Azoth, the head writer of Avatar The Last Airbender, is coming out with a new series directly for Netflix. And it is called The Dragon Prince. And the poster already makes it so good. First of all, he's the head writer for Avatar The Last Airbender. And I love Avatar The Last Airbender. It's so good.
The cartoon?
Good. Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's only been a cartoon.
No, there was a movie.
No, there was no movie.
I apologize. I take full responsibility for that. This is Sarah.
There was no movie.
Okay.
No, I'm just joking. But but no, yeah, he was a writer for the cartoon series Avatar: The Last Airbender, and now And now he's making this for Netflix. And the description reads is, two human princes who forge an unlikely bond with an elfin assassin sent to kill them embark on an epic quest to bring peace to their warring lands.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty
and
cool.
The elf assassin is a girl.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so it's, oh my god. Netflix tweeted it, and you can see the poster, and it's just of this giant looming dragon over these three kids, and it looks amazing. So I am super excited for it. It's set to come out in September, so I'm going to have to renew my Netflix subscription at some point in time before September so I can watch it. But I'm super, super excited. Netflix has really been killing it.
Oh, absolutely.
Not everything, but especially with the kids' cartoons stuff. Guillermo del Toro's Trollhunters?
Oh, yeah.
So good.
I've heard a lot of good stuff about that.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta watch that.
Their anime stuff, pretty good too. From Devilman Crybaby. Oh my god. It's really good and kind of a bit hard to explain. I feel like that falls for anime a lot, but it's basically about a demon and an angel.
Okay.
Hmm. What's it called?
Devilman Crybaby.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's really good.
Well, even their movies are awesome. I just finished watching one called Brain on Fire, which is based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Really good movie.
Yeah, they're
they have a lot of really great movies out there.
Yeah,
yeah.
And what was it for the Emmys? I think they shoved. They're either on par or they've edged out HBO.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's that looks very, very promising and super cool. So I can't wait to see what else they've got for us.
I'm really excited because Netflix, they're doing these movies that are really well budgeted. Is that
yeah.
a word?
Budgeted.
They're good quality and there's good stories and they're not like foo foo about like I need to be in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just straight to Netflix and they're brilliant.
They're
I love
brilliant.
That.
I mean
yeah.
the production. Value or quality of the TV shows and movies that are going straight to Netflix are super high. I mean,
oh, yes.
it's not a thing that's comparable to straight to DVD or
right.
you know thing
mm-hmm.
anymore. I mean, when I see a Netflix original or even a Hulu original, actually based on all of the other ones that I've seen up until now, it makes me more interested in watching it because the things that
mm-hmm.
I've seen so far have been so good.
Exactly,
yeah.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
And then they have
uh-huh.
series for like from other countries that are equally
yeah.
as good. Like I was watching The Forest, which is French. It's
mm-hmm.
super good.
Yeah. I like watching all the Bollywood films that they have.
I've never seen a Bollywood film.
Bollywood, okay, first of all, you got to set yourself in because those shits are long.
Oh, yeah.
They're so long. Oh, my God. But it's they're all amazing because there's so much dancing. The outfits, the actors and the actresses, all so beautiful. The jewelry, the makeup, oh, my God.
It's
freaking
like
oh,
over the
check
top,
it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like... They are extra. They are telenovela extra too. So
oh my gosh, I don't know if it was Netflix or Hulu. There was no. I'm misremembering. I was watching Univision because I was watching the soccer game when Mexico was playing. I'm not sure who, but there was a commercial in between the breaks of the game of this. Telenovela that was getting ready to start with this beautiful specimen of a man that I don't even know what the show was about or what they were talking about because I have to really, because I'm not a native speaker or that was not my first language, I have to really concentrate to like really understand what people are saying when they're talking especially so fast like they do there. And so I don't know exactly what this was about, but I did get that it was about him and it was going to start. And I was like, oh my god, I have to watch this. I don't remember when I meant to go like research it a little bit more because I don't even remember what it was called. But I was like, oh my god, I'm going to watch this. It looked amazing. If any of you out there know what I'm talking about, please let me know.
Exactly.
A man that steals your breath away. That's what telenovelas are about, and I'm about it.
Yes.
Anyways. So, speaking of big production stuff, and, like, yeah, like, Netflix does pour a lot of movie in, a lot of money into their films and, like, and TV shows, I say, but, like, their series and stuff like that, and, their cartoons, as well, but I still feel like they are being, they're still pretty, pretty much, not as big as Hollywood movies,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Simply because the new Joker movie prequel,
mm-hmm.
it already has a starting budget of $55 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Starting budget.
Yeah, starting.
Yeah, so it's definitely going to go up. Mm. And this is, and I say this because it's been, Warner Bros. Has officially announced that Joaquin Phoenix will be playing the Joker in this prequel movie.
So Jen's chisme is confirming Sarah's chisme from
yeah.
last episode.
Yeah. I'm just following up, you know, giving those finishing touches, reaffirming. Isn't that what you do with chisme? You gotta follow. It's a fact now. You gotta make sure, like, it wasn't just hearsay, it's actually real. Yeah. So.
Like I said before, I'm a little apprehensive because, like you said, it's an Origins Joker movie, and I feel that Joaquin is a little bit old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do we really know the Joker's age?
I feel that he was in his, like, maybe, like, mid-20s.
You know what? I don't remember when I read Killing Joke what made me think that he was older. That he was an old man, but an older... Because he was a salesman,
and they were expecting their first child, yeah.
Yeah, and so I feel like, in my mind, I just assumed he was, like, an older... Like, I wouldn't say, like... like middle age, but maybe like late 30s or something. But yeah, I don't know that we know at any point in time in the DC universe whether or not it's ever been addressed. But just in reading Killing Joke, I just got the impression that he was older.
Mm-hmm. Also, Arkham Asylum, I feel like he's like in that like 50 or something as well, just because of the way that he's been drawn and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I guess you can make an argument for either one for being young. And this is supposed to be a prequel-ish.
Yeah.
Or, like, his origin.
Origin.
But, so. Like, either way, like, we don't really know his age.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be leaving it open. I mean, you know, like I said before, Heath Ledger just knocked it out of the ballpark for me. You know, so I'm going to be open-minded.
Yeah. I'm not a Joaquin Phoenix fan, but I definitely am curious to see what they do. I mean, Joker is such a huge character, and I mean, he is...
Oh my god, it's almost like he doesn't have other movies about him. I'm being facetious, but it's just like, what are they gonna bring? And like, the description...
I guess because I've never seen any of those other movies, so... Oh. I've never seen any of Heath Ledger, Joker, or...
Oh, okay.
Jeez, you're really...
Did you see Suicide Squad?
You're missing out.
Oh, my God. No, that's something you can miss out. the Suicide Squad one, The Heath Ledger one is good.
Yeah, I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Mark Hamill voicing Joker.
Oh, yes. My God. Okay, yes.
So good.
That,
That's like the best. The laugh, oh, my God, I love him.
Mm-hmm. But this movie is supposed to be a darker and more experimental in tone and content, akin to a crime drama-esque film. You may not see it, but I'm rolling my eyes. Like, okay, how much darker can you get than Superman snapping a man's neck in front of children? Dark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you going to hit me with? Like, I could say a lot of shit. And I would not be surprised if they went with it. And that's just... Honestly, that's fucking boring. So, I might go see it. And I might not. Hey, I didn't pay at all to go see Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, yeah.
My best friend paid for it.
Okay.
I also didn't pay at all to see Justice League. And that was a relief in of itself, too, because it wasn't that good either.
I still haven't seen Justice League, and I will gladly pay my money but now to see Aquaman. But now I think I've missed my opportunity to see it on the big screen. I'll have to watch it.
Hey, the Aquaman movies
Oh,
the
yeah.
Yes.
Black,
the Black
yes.
Manta costume has been shown.
Oh, I did. Ooh. I remember seeing that. But I did not see... I did see Batman versus Superman, and I was bored out of my mind, except for the parts that Wonder Woman was in.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Was the brief 5 minutes
yeah.
she was in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the highlight of it. The Wonder Woman movie was great.
Yeah.
It was super good, but Justice League... Even with Jason Momoa shirtless, not worth it. Not worth it.
That's disappointing.
I know. But, that's my cheese.
That was a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I'm spent.
All right, guys, it's that time again. Kristen, what time is it?
It is beer time!
Yay!
Cerveza. Today's beer comes to you from El Segundo Brewing Company. That's pretty local to us here in the South Bay. And this beer is called Mayberry IPA, and it's so cute. It has like those of you who may be under a certain age might not recognize the town Mayberry as the town that Opie and his father lived in. What's the name of that show? Why am I drawing a blank? Jen is no good for this.
I'm just like,
the Andy Griffith show?
Andy Griffith show,
okay,
yeah. I was
gonna say, who's Opie?
So Mayberry was the town. Andy Griffith show was this black and white TV show.
With Don Knotts.
With Don Knotts.
I
love
I've
that
heard
guy.
Of it.
Yes, and Andy Griffith was played by...
I don't know who that guy
Me
is.
Me either. I don't remember. But Opie was the son, and he was, he is, who's the dude who used to be in Happy Days and now is like a really, Ron Howard.
Ron Howard,
yes. So that's how Ron Howard got started in the industry.
In the industry.
So anyway, there's a cute little picture of like little small town America here on the front of the beer. And this is... Mayberry IPA, a 7.2 alcohol by volume beer. And it says here that Mosaic hops take center stage in this truly West Coast India pale ale. The perfect companion for enjoying a sunny day on Main Street with us in our charming little town, affectionately known as Mayberry by the Sea. I did not know that.
What?
I just learned that. Something I learned today. El Segundo is known as Mayberry by...
Wow.
If you've ever been to El Segundo, you actually, I can see it.
Yeah,
I can totally
see it.
See it.
Yeah.
That's cute. And so I guess that's El Segundo is known as Mayberry by the Sea. That's kind of cool. It says here on the side, smell, drink, and repeat. I think that is very good advice when you're drinking beer. Always get all of your senses involved. So I'm going to pour some for...
So blow your nose before tasting it. El Segundo Brewing Company is located at 140 Main Street, El Segundo, California, 90245. And it looks like it closes at 10. And some days like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday closes at 9. I have been to their tap room only once. And it's pretty nice. It's, you know, kind of an average tap room. It's everybody... It just feels like in El Segundo, everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
It's sort of like
just
cheers.
It's a very close community.
Yeah.
Right.
By the sea.
And I've actually, the one time I went to the tap room was because they were El Cuervo Art Gallery
was
opening.
They are also located in El Segundo.
Yeah, they're right, actually, a little bit across from
okay.
the brewery. So it's if you're going to go see some art, check out the brewery. So let's take a swig, guys.
So I am smelling it. And it smells very citrusy. It smells very, very citrusy. It made my mouth water.
Yes, it does.
Definitely.
It smells very citrusy. I like it. And it's kind of like a bright gold.
Yes, it's not very
hazy
the way some IPAs are.
Uh-huh. Yes. Looks good, guys. Let's take a taste.
Wow.
I wasn't expecting this to be as good. In my head, I didn't think it was going to be this good.
This is very light.
It's light and perfect, actually,
it's
for this weather.
Yeah, it's
this
a
weather,
very
oh
light
yeah.
IPA,
very
which
very
I
good.
Think is often what you get when you get a West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I also was not expecting it. It's very light, and there is that hoppiness. It is an IPA after all, but it is not overpowering. It's really good.
It doesn't linger.
Mm-hmm.
You get
like a pop of flavor, mm-hmm. and then it goes down smoothly. It's very smooth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's very, very smooth.
You know how I say that I either drink or eat? Mm-hmm. I don't like to mix them up because then I get really full. Mm-hmm. This is type of beer that I could have at a barbecue.
It's funny because I have to do both.
That's weird.
When I drink my beer, when I eat, I like to wash it down with something, so it might as well be beer.
No, for me, it's completely opposite. Like, if I commit to drinking beer, then I can't eat because then I get full really fast and
I can't
drink
enough. It does fill you up. You were not able to attend
that's right.
our beer tour. We toured 6 different breweries here in the South Bay, and you're absolutely 100% right. By brewery 5, I would even say 4, my tummy was so full, and I felt so uncomfortable, and I was just like, I don't want any more anything in my stomach, but I was determined. I persevered to try all the beers at all of the different locations, but then I had realized that so many hours had gone by, I hadn't eaten, so I needed to eat, and we just happened to be at one of the breweries that had sausages there. Not the right thing to eat when you're full of heavy IPA beer and you're trying to fit more in.
Right.
By the time we got to the very last brewery, which was the Strand, right near where I live, I bought a beer and I took one sip and I left it completely full there because I just could not do it. And I felt so bad about it. I was like, oh no, can I get this to go?
I didn't eat when I arrived there.
Yeah.
So that's why I was eating and drinking a lot.
Yeah. So definitely I understand your game plan, that if you are, especially IPAs, they're very filling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this one was a really delightful surprise for me because the bottle, I believe, was like between $6 and $7.
Okay.
Dollars. Mm-hmm. I got it at Costco. Always there. And I always tell myself I'm going to get it, but I never do. And then this time I was looking for a beer for the podcast, and I said, you know what, let's give this one a go. So I am really exceptionally surprised. I really believe that this was going to be a little bland. Mm-hmm. But it's actually really refreshing, full of flavor, citrusy, hoppy, smooth. I love it. I like I said, I'm pleasantly surprised. This is Sarah. I'm going to give it a full. This is a great beer for a barbecue.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a full as well because it's really good and it's really light. And like I said, in this weather, in the hot humidity,
yes.
It's perfect. And I really like the color for it too, and I like the citrusy smell for it as well.
I had a late lunch, so I didn't eat dinner, and I'm already feeling a little bit.
So, and the LA Times actually did a profile of this particular beer, and they talked about the tropical fruit aromas and flavors. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we smelled right off. Mm-hmm. So, and I tasted it right off too. So I definitely say that if those are the kind of flavor notes that you enjoy, this would be a beer that you would want to really try out. And it says that there's some pineapple, some guava, like a distinct blueberry twang. So there's a lot of different fruit that you get in one mouthful. So I also think that I will go with a full. I would enjoy this on a hot summer day. Or to warm me up on a cold winter night. So I definitely would say full for this. And we live so close to it. I've never been to El Segundo Brewing Company. I have tried multiples of their beers because they're on tap around here because they're so local.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I definitely like to go try them out.
Road trip!
So this is a very strong full from all of us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, give that a try, guys. right, guys, we are going to review a book. What are we reviewing, Jen?
You didn't think we were, did you?
I know. We get carried away. I know we rescheduled, and that's why we have so much to say. So, so what are we reviewing, Jen?
So, today, brought to us by Fanbase Press.
Yes.
Wait, how do we know Fanbase Press? That sounds so familiar.
Oh, my God. It's almost like they made a book that we reviewed. Quince.
Yeah, they're an awesome publishing company. And they publish Quince and now Margins and a bunch of other great books as well. But we're very excited about this one. Take it away, Jen.
Okay. So, brought to us by Fanbase Press is The Margins, written by David Ocampo and Paul Montgomery, illustrated by Amanda Donahue, lettering and design also by David Ocampo. And I adored it so much. Oh my God.
It almost felt like this was written for us.
You know what? You're absolutely right.
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
This was tailor-made for me.
Yeah,
totally.
Oh my God. It's so, so good. At one point, I wanted to cry because it was, oh my God, it was so good. It was, remember when we read and reviewed Love and Rockets?
Yeah.
And I said that book was like reading a friend.
Yes.
That's what this is as well.
Yes. Absolutely agree.
This is what this book is. It's like coming home.
Yes.
It's like finding something lost.
Yeah.
It is like greeting an old friend that you've missed. And
that makes me misty.
I don't want to give much away about the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much I want to say about this, but I want to leave the listener with this. I don't want to tell you the story in full because I want you to read this, and I want you to be as excited as I was reading it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with the basics. Yep. The main character is a Latina woman, is a queer Latina woman.
Yes.
She's married to another Latina, and they have just moved to Portland, Oregon.
Yes, she's an artist. Mm-hmm. Her name is Charlie.
Uh-huh. She's a comic artist, and just an artist, and an artist as well.
Mm-hmm.
And her wife is...
Rita,
and she is opening a food truck.
Lovely Rita, meet her maid. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And it is... how do I say? It is a story about finding your purpose.
Yes.
Finding what drives you, and
in sort of what you were destined to do in a sense as well,
in a bit, in that it almost finding something that it almost seems like fate.
Yes.
Something that you click with so much so that it's almost like it was destined to happen, but it's because you chose to do so.
Yes.
But this book is definitely heavy on the sci-fi.
Yeah.
And and the fantastical.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there is an aspect of this book where in the real world, it's basically sepia colored.
Yes. Yes.
It's in very browns, blacks, kind of, it's nothing is ever exactly white,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it's a very sepia tone. It's like looking at an old photograph.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Except for a few pages of color,
mm-hmm. right?
And those pages of color are absolutely amazing. There's a lot of detail in this, and
lot of detail in the art.
But mm-hmm. I like that. And this is one of the things that I'm gonna seem like I'm going off on a tangent. But have you guys watched Corpse Bride?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in Corpse Bride, the Victorian era world that the protagonist is in is all in blues.
Mm-hmm.
Blues, blacks, whites, very, very dark midnight colors. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't ever seem to be day there, or if it's day, it's very cloudy. But as soon as he's in the underworld, there's color everywhere. And I like that visual. I like that visual. I like that divide, basically. And in The Corpse Bride, it was basically how the real world shackled you to its grimness.
Mm-hmm.
And that you were kind of a bit free to do as you pleased in death. So that death shouldn't be kind of like death shouldn't be scary. You should see it as a liberation,
yeah,
kind right. of thing. In this one, it's it was more that reality sometimes isn't up to par. We're lost. We don't know what we're doing. We're trying to find meaning, and sometimes that can seem like grim. That can seem kind of dark, and it can be very frustrating. And the protagonist was frustrated a lot because she didn't know what she was doing.
Yeah.
But then, as soon as she discovered this world, Elad, the paradise, mm-hmm. That's when her world was filled with color,
mm-hmm.
and that she could find her meaning in the fantastical. That I adored that. But even that the. In the end, that didn't deter her from the real world as
right,
well.
Yeah.
In the end, that she could find a balance
mm-hmm. yes.
between the
yes,
both of
absolutely.
Them. And that was the same thing in The Corpse Bride as well. Because, of course, in The Corpse Bride, in the end, the dead come up and they bring color to
yeah.
the world of the living. And there's that whole thing. But I like that divide. I like how that worked in this comic as well.
Yeah.
So it's I really adored that about this book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to let you guys talk about it, or else I'll keep going on.
Well, the first few pages I was reading, I was loving the dialogue. Like, the
yeah.
monologue
yeah,
and all
uh-huh.
of that, the description, the whole thing. I was, like, so in love with it. Because I love, like, those period pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love, like, when people speak English the way, I guess, they spoke it so many years ago, where it was
mm-hmm.
there was no slang or whatnot.
Well,
or if there was,
it was just of the time.
Yeah. So it just reading the first two pages, I was like, this is going to take me off for a ride. I was
mm-hmm.
like ready for it. Right. And then meeting Rita,
mm-hmm.
The partner of Charlie, I just totally fell in love with her.
Yeah.
When I read her with an accent.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like she was so alive. So, the character Rita, she's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
She was so alive and vibrant. She cooks great. The world, the best tamales in the galaxy.
Yeah.
And and they're basically kind of starting off in Portland,
mm-hmm.
so they're kind of finding their fit. Starting their life together in Portland because they kind of I think in passing they were at a coffee shop and they were talking about like the other places they were trying to settle into but
mm-hmm.
decided for Portland, and Rita was like, we have to spice it up, we have to do something different, like let's go salsa dancing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie is working on a comic book with a fellow writer. Who's sending pages via email
mm-hmm.
or messenger,
mm-hmm.
So they don't actually really meet.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of a shut-in, and he's just recently lost his mother, and his sister is sort of like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I need your help, because there's so much we have to take
mm-hmm.
care of, because mom just passed. And that's something that I can identify with, just
mm-hmm.
because when my mom passed, there were so many things to handle. So I kind of felt her frustration. So one of the things I really loved about this comic is you really feel the emotion the characters are feeling.
Yeah.
Those are really present with the dialogue and also the art,
mm-hmm.
And in the body movement. I felt that the art was really, really wonderful. We were talking about Latinidad in the comic books when you have a Latino characters.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a lot of, I wouldn't say like a lot, like in your face,
mm-hmm.
But it was like sprinkled on perfectly. Like
mm-hmm.
when she was cooking in the kitchen, she was like, when she was at the store, I need cilantro.
Mm-hmm.
When she was in the kitchen, there was like a little calavera on the desk or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you didn't get the notion that Charlie was Latina
mm-hmm.
until like she Rita was talking to her in Spanish, and
mm-hmm.
It was. And then one of my favorite pages was when Charlie was confronted with one of the characters from Elad.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking, and she's like, you know, I'm used to the misogyny, and I'm
yes.
used to.
Oh my god!
I was like,
yeah.
oh my god,
yeah.
that's like my
uh-huh.
favorite one. I mean, she goes on a tangent, and I loved it.
Yeah,
and she's like, oh hell no, thinly veiled racism. I get.
Yeah.
Patronizing misogyny, old white guy, been there, but
mm-hmm.
you do not get to tell me. How this thing goes. I was like,
mm-hmm.
dude, I love you. You're like, like she's tiny, she's like really petite, mm-hmm. but she has like a very big personality.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that she's a very strong character as well. Like
mm-hmm.
the way she, the way the story unravels for her,
mm-hmm.
She's a very powerful personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that she was very strong. Although like you can see that she has a lot of like physical weaknesses, like when she's trying to bike,
yeah,
she's mm-hmm. trying to cycle or. You know, she's a very assertive woman, and I love that.
I love that too, like, because as I said before, I didn't say it before in this podcast, but I said it before when we were talking about it. At first, I didn't get that Charlie was Latina mm-hmm. until later mm-hmm. on, when she understood the Spanish
yeah.
and everything, and she like knew what she was talking, and she mentions it specifically in that panel that. That Sarah was talking about, that the thinly veiled racism I get,
right,
misogyny,
yeah.
old white dude.
Yeah.
Ain't that the truth? But especially in that scene, you can kind of, because she's very much a shut-in.
Mm-hmm.
She's the introverted Latina woman, which was really cute to me, too, the relationship.
Yeah.
There's the spicy, outgoing Latina woman, and then there's the private, oh, my God, don't look at me, introverted Latina woman.
Yeah.
And yeah. I just thought it was really cute that they got together and that they're married and everything, and I was just like, oh, she makes her go out.
Yeah. She's like, you have to come outside. It's actually sunny. It's not raining. Let's
yeah.
go out for a picnic, you know. And she's like, do I have to? She's like, you gotta eat.
Let's go outside.
Yeah.
And I've seen that kind of dynamic with other people I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really cute, and it was very real. But where was I going with this?
Well, while you think of where you're going, I want to jump on that particular statement, the fact that it's very real. I think this book does an amazing job of bringing into the comic book world something that we've continuously pointed out is missing on a grander scale when it comes to Latinx representation within the comic book industry, and that is intersectionality. These are not just Latina characters. These are queer Latina characters. These are this is a non-gender conforming Latina character. This
oh, yeah.
is a you know a woman who is very you know. The relationship between Charlie and Rita is so real. The little things like, you know, trying to, like you guys were saying, trying to get the one introverted partner out to do things. And Charlie, her little inner dialogue about kind of being frustrated sometimes with what Rita is trying to get her to do, and while she's working on her drawings. And then just... Rita having this dream of opening, that's a big part of the storyline too, is that Rita has this dream of opening her own food cart. And
it's
then
you and Eddie.
and Charlie wanting to support that, but also having her own dreams that mm-hmm. Some literally having her own dreams. And so I just felt like it was so real. None of it was forced in reading, and it all just those bits of reality, side by side with all of the fantastical and sci-fi and all that stuff, was such a freaking perfect marriage to this story.
Yes. Like, you don't believe that you're gonna see like trolls and
yes,
and like magic fruit. And all this stuff, like, coexisting with this world, this reality that we read. And it just is a wonderful marriage of the whole story. And it all makes sense.
Yeah.
And it all intertwines so beautifully.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I like I said, it's like they wrote this for me.
Yeah.
Because I love, like, period pieces. I love fantasy. I love seeing myself on the comic book page. I love reading Spanish in the comic
that,
book.
Yes, mm-hmm. I love that.
Yes.
Whenever I see a Latina a Latinx character speaking Spanish that doesn't seem forced.
Right.
And this never mm-hmm. seemed forced, and it seemed, I mean, we keep using this over and over again, but it seemed so natural and real. Mm-hmm. And that was just an amazing addition to the story, and it made it made it easy for me to identify.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
No, definitely. Where I had been going before was the Latinidad, and from the previous podcast, the one comic that we had via online,
Vengeance Nevada.
Yeah, Vengeance Nevada. That had been good, mm-hmm. but and the creator had told us, the main character is Latina,
right?
But there was no notion of it at all. There was no Latinidad.
Yeah,
this one has it.
Yeah,
from everything, from how, from the little decorations in the house to how Rita speaks, and in the end, once I got it that she was Latina, I went back and I saw that.
I saw it
in the little, that is completely unforced. That's natural, and I really appreciated it.
Like, one of the parts I really like was when Rita was drawing on the pages with her little stick figures. She's like, mi amor, regresa. Like, mi amor, please come back. Like, that kind of stuff.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Those little endearments.
Yeah.
In Spanish, because you know that when you say it in Spanish, it's like, it sort of, it hits a lot harder.
Yeah.
It has more weight.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really loved the great-grandfather fisherman guy. I love that guy. I love the way he talks. It's one of my I love that guy. I mean, I know he's basically the bad guy, but it almost seems like Killmonger. Like, mm-hmm. you know he's bad and he has to do bad things, but he's doing it for the bigger picture. And
I disagree.
You really do?
I disagree.
When he met his great grandson,
I think he was being selfish.
I do too.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
I did not get that at all.
He was. I felt he was being selfish.
I think that he didn't have the power that Charlie had over the world, Elad, that mm-hmm. that he thought he did.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
He went about it the wrong way with his great grandson. Mm-hmm. And I think because that was his way of mending the boundary between the worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were spilling into each other with the fruit in the house that disappeared.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And that was his way of controlling that, but he didn't control it because he didn't have the strength mm-hmm. that Charlie did.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I feel he meant well, but he went about it the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But you guys say that you think he was that selfish.
I feel like there was, I remember a part of it where he actually said, it's mine. Like, I read that as if it's mine and I don't want you to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that you are drawing or writing or whatever, it's taking it away from me. Mm-hmm. That he was perfectly fine where he was and he was forced to come back to fix it. But to me, what he meant to fix it was to make it so that it was still only his.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's what I got from it. Maybe... the whole killing the great
spoiler.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah.
Oh,
sorry. But I think that I'd have to reread it to maybe see if I can see your part of it. But just in the read that I did, I got that he was being selfish.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to just, because we're kind of giving bits and pieces and stuff, but I want to give the actual official fan base press little synopsis of this story.
Okay.
Because it hasn't been released yet. It is right now available for pre-order on the Fan Base Press website, and we'll put up a link for it on our Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. But basically says, in the margins, artist Charlie Kao's new gig begins as a fun challenge to breathe new life into the forgotten pulp world of Elad, this time as a comic book. But as tendrils of this lost realm creep into her sleepy Portland neighborhood, Charlie realizes that Elad is much more than the lines on a day-dreamt map. More than the sum of an old hack's prose, Elad has its hooks in Charlie, and what was once fantasy has become deadly reality for both the artist and the woman she loves. Mm. So...
That's a good synopsis.
Yes.
Yeah.
without giving anything away.
Oh my gosh, we struggle.
I know. Sorry.
My bad, you guys.
But definitely, one of the things that I need to know about now, and I want to talk to, is it David Acampo? Somebody I want to talk to, and I think that they're going to be at San Diego. Maybe we can do a quick little interview or something.
Absolutely, that'd be great.
But as we were waiting to get started, the book was here on the table, and I just happened to look down, and I'm like, what did I miss? This here, it's the margins, but it's also the marg in S. Marg is big, and then little I-N, and then S. And I'm like, did I miss something in the story? Like, I feel like that's a clue to something.
That looks cool.
Oh, I really wish there's a sequel, because I want to know more.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, was there something in there that was called Marg, or am I just reading into it too much?
Might not, maybe. Because
I feel like that's super intentional. Mm-hmm. Like, they could have all been the same size.
Right.
Like, what does that mean?
Is it supposed to mean something?
Is it supposed to mean something? Or was it just a creative decision for the title? But, like, what's the marg? We didn't ever saw that word in there?
No.
Okay.
No.
We did not. See, going back to the great-great-grandfather, there was a point where he said, no, don't think about the girl. To do so would only lend her spirit momentum along a calamitous trajectory. So even he was kind of doubting himself before he was, like, going to dive into the decisions he made. I don't know, but I really loved him. I loved him. I'm sorry, he's a bad guy, but I loved him. This is Sarah. His dialogue.
He's an interesting character.
Yes.
I'll give it that much.
I'm so sorry. One thing I almost missed. Do you guys remember that moment where there was like kind of a flashback between the great grandfather and this boy who inspired him mm-hmm. to write this story?
Yeah.
And that they were suggesting that it was his first love.
I remember that flashback.
Wait, what?
But now that you mention it, that had not connected before.
Yes.
And now that does, and holy shit.
Wait, what was it that you just... I was just looking up definitions of Marg. It could just be Marge. I mean, that's also someone's shortened name, Marge. Mm-hmm. But Marg in Hindi and Punjabi means road.
Oh, wow. Huh. Okay. Nice. So. Interesting.
I'm going to make something out of this, whether the creators want to or not.
I mean, that's pretty good either way.
Yeah.
There's a specific flashback where we see the great-great-grandfather with in the company of a young man who actually inspired the story he wrote mm-hmm. And who was the inspiration or the image of Typhon Creed, which is the main character in the story.
Uh-huh.
And it was suggested that that was his first love.
That's what I got, too.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I completely and utterly missed this, and I'm the queer one.
And the reason I thought that this was such a very important note is because he went and disappeared when he was about to become a father with his wife.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a very important point as to why he never came back.
Right.
So I thought that was worth kind of exploring as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many levels to this comic book, I think.
There is. There really is.
That I think it would be equally as amazing to reread it over and over. This is the type of book I think you can reread and find new things in it.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. I would love for this book to just be the next year's Eisner Award winner nominee, the way that Quinto is this year. Fanbase Press is really knocking it out of the park with a lot of their published works, and this one here, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't actually read the little synopsis before I started looking at it and reading it, and in the beginning I was like, okay, I mean, you don't know it when you're reading it, but you're in a lot.
Yes.
And you're reading it. I'm like, okay, I don't know if this is really my thing. But then when you realize that it's like part of this, a bigger story, it's a story within a story, which I love.
Yes.
I love the trope of story within a story. Mm-hmm. And I got into it immediately. Like, I was drawn in with, we first meet, the writer, what's his name?
Gordy,
yeah. But then as soon as we meet Charlie and Rita, that was it. And a fun little fact, the writer, or the one of the co-writers, the Acampo, David Acampo, he is not Latino, but his fiance is, and he says that his fiance, was the influence for the character of Rita.
Wow.
It was very, very much the influence.
I love it. I love it already.
that's very heartwarming.
Oh, well, it was so cool. It was so pleasant. We haven't even touched very much on the artwork, but it is so detail-oriented, the artwork.
There
is a point where Rita's opening the refrigerator, and on the refrigerator there's magnets of fruits. Mm-hmm. Plastic fruits, and I grew up with
that. So did I. My grandmother had it on her refrigerator.
Yeah, exactly.
We still have plastic fruits on my fridge.
Yeah.
this is reality for me.
So, I mean, it is important to note that the illustrator, the artist, is a female, Amanda Donahue. Mm-hmm. So we definitely want to make sure that we call attention to the fact that it is it's a female that is doing the amazing artwork of this book. And look at inside, it's even in different freaking font.
Wow.
Oh my god, okay.
I'm sorry.
Kristen is obsessed with it. She is going to make this a thing. This is a thing now.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but there was a little part where Rita called Charlie. And so Charlie looked at her cell phone and she saw, and you see Rita's profile picture on, and Rita's eating. I thought that was so cute.
I remember that was
I was like, oh my god, that's adorable. But one of the reasons that I thought was that most of the characters, Rita was, and Charlie had a bit of a Latino twang in their speech, was because one of the scenes where Charlie was speaking to the great-great-grandfather, he said, I keep calling him the great-great-grandfather, he said, your English is rather good. And she says, well, yours is outdated.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang it.
Yeah.
It's a great book. I love it. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to give it the panaderia.
Yeah.
I am. Straight out. This is a book that was written for me. The dialogue and the fantasy, the Latinidad, the art, it was wonderful for me. This is Sarah, and you get the whole panaderia.
So this is Kristen. I also want to give it the highest rating that we have. More than three conchas en champurrado, definitely the whole panaderia. It is such a good book. It pulled me in from the beginning, and not only did it pull me in from the beginning, but it continued to surprise me, and it continued to show me different layers of the story that interested me and made me want to continue turning the pages. And I look for that in any kind of medium of story that I'm looking at. So definitely the highest rating I could give it, and I recommend that you pre-order this book or you go and buy it. We will for sure have copies on our shelves at Heidi Hill Comics when it becomes available.
Mm-hmm. So this is Jen, and I will physically go to Guatemala
to the bakery that is about two blocks away from where my sister lives, buy it out and bring it all back just to give to the creators of this and to fan base press, because that's how much I fucking love this thing.
I love the heck out of this.
I love it. It gets the whole panaderia, all the conchas, all the champurrado.
And the café de olla.
And the café de olla. All of it.
It was so beautifully written.
Yes,
and
it was.
The way that it was all positioned, I don't know. Even the argument she kind of had with Rita, I was just like, dude, that's so beautifully, like...
That's a relationship argument.
Yes,
like,
that was,
like,
yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. And not to demean male writers when... all male writers when they write females, but definitely we've seen in our experience of reading comics that there are some that can do it a lot better than others.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We all 100% agree that the Jaime writes females amazingly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's been some others, and then you know, a couple that we've read recently that really were horrible, but the male team co-writers that wrote this book, I think, definitely got it right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, guys, we can't say enough. This was Copa Nadria all around.
Yeah. Batman, Batman, Batman. Joker just put me on acid. You wanna wait like a maverick? We need to make something happen.
All right, guys, it's that time again. What is on my radar, Kristen?
On my radar this week is a horror book that I caught up with over this last week. I had been a little bit behind in my reading and had the opportunity to catch up. And I caught up on a book called Regression. It is a horror...
I remember Regression, yeah.
It's a horror book written by Colin Bunn. I don't think we've read anything by Colin Bunn here. I don't think he has any Latina characters, and he himself isn't Latino, but I'll have to talk to him about that.
Mm-hmm.
He came out with this book, I think, at the end of last year, maybe, when the first one came out. It was actually May. May 2017, so mm-hmm. It's already been over a year. Jeez, I'm really behind.
Yeah.
Well, that was number one that came out, so I just caught up. But the synopsis of this book is Adrian is plagued by ghastly waking nightmares. To understand and possibly treat these awful visions, Adrian reluctantly agrees to past life regression hypnotherapy. As his consciousness is cast back through time, Adrian witnesses a scene of horrific debauchery and diabolism. Waking, he is more unsettled than before, and with good reason. Something has followed him back. Adrian descends into a world of occult conspiracy, mystery, reincarnation, and insanity from which there is no escape.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now,
oh my God, am I going to have to read this book? Okay, look, I remember when this book came out, and I could not pick it up because I have this thing about insects.
I'm going to show... This is the cover of the first issue. I'm showing Sarah.
Oh my God.
Which is why I said that was a great, because you were talking about all the insects from hell.
Oh,
I said that's a great transition into my radar, because in this story, what he finds out, and there's this cult that is involved, but there is a little bit of explanation of the fact in this book that at some point it was the insects that were in charge, and that people as gods, they, you know, were bowing to them and worshiping them and stuff. And so a lot of this book revolves around insects and scenes drawn with like insects and worms and stuff, like just coming out of people, and like, or while they're having like orgies, there's like insects all over them.
Wow.
It's just so freaking creepy. And if you are a horror fan, I highly recommend this book. It is so good, and I 100% think that Colin Bunn is doing his best work when he's writing horror.
Really?
He writes X-Men Blue, Gold, I don't remember now. He's doing Venom, he wrote Magneto, he's done Drax, I think. He's done a lot of Marvel stuff, but he is absolutely at his top when he does horror. And Regression is really, really good. So that's what's on my radar.
Well, I love the cover. I love that. I love maggots.
Yeah.
I love all that shit.
Jim's face right now.
I actually host an art show, and some of my pieces have cockroaches and
I think I remember seeing
crickets.
That. Yeah. And you know that these are high in protein, and that one day we all are going to be eating cockroaches and crickets.
I'm all about that. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I ate crickets in Mexico, is because I want to get ready for the apocalypse.
Yeah. Isn't it like a delicacy, like in street food, like
yes, in Mexico?
Yeah, and also in some Asian countries, I think.
I believe so. There is a maguey that you can split open, and there's these like worms that you could also eat, like worm tacos. It's really cool.
Grubs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, grubs. Oh, they do that on Survivor.
When the apocalypse comes, count me out. Count me the fuck out. Your girl's gone. But anyway, the entire reason I didn't pick up the first issue was because of the first issue.
Yeah,
because
I remember her saying she didn't even want to look at it.
Aww. I have this thing about insects crawling into ears.
Yep, and that's exactly what it shows right here.
Yeah.
So I think that volume 2 has been solicited. It actually is going to be coming out this month. So that means that the first, 12 issues are out already? Or maybe 10. I don't know how many's in here. But it is, it's coming out July 25th, volume 2. And it is, let me see. I want to see how many, if it tells us how many. Yep, 6. So it's 5 issues per volume of trade paperback. So volume 2 is 6 through 10.
Excellent.
Yep. And I think actually that's, I read up to 10. So I'm all caught up with trades, and I have to read the single issues. But yes, go read it. It's just, it's so good.
Excellent. This is Sarah, and on my radar is the Charmed reboot that is with all the Latinas. Uh-huh. All the girls are Latinas. And it's going to air on the CW on October 14th, 2018. So I'm pretty excited about that. I've seen
CW show.
CW. Hey. It's gonna be. I you know what? I saw some of the trailer and some of the little kind of like sneak peeks, and it looks really good. I'm really excited about that one. I'm also excited that Neil Gaiman is turning The Sandman into an expanded comics universe. So I can't wait for that. Also, we have The Vertigo is relaunching in DC with 7 new titles. And on top of the list is Border Town by Eric M. Esquivel and Ramon Villalobos. So I'm really excited. I've been looking forward to Border Town for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as it was solicited, she messaged me. I'm like, hello. It just came out. It's not even due out till next year.
I was like,
they just announced it.
I was like, I would like to start my pull list with Border Town. So I'm really, really, really excited about this. There's another.
Is there anywhere where it's actually talking about what this book is about?
No.
Little synopsis?
Yeah.
Yeah. When a crack in the border between worlds releases an army of monsters from Mexican folklore into the small town of Devil's Fork, Arizona, the residents blame the ensuing weirdness and shared nightmares with the unworldly radio transmissions, the mysterious goat mutilations, on those goddamn illegals.
Oh, that actually sounds really good.
Yes. That sounds really
and
cool.
This morning, was it this morning or yesterday?
Yesterday. Eric Esquivel.
Esquivel.
Yes.
Yes. He actually tweeted, or Facebooked, I'm not sure which, that he got death threats from some people about this book, and who are threatening to create a scene at his panel in San Diego.
They said we're gonna bring the damn exterminators or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
I was like, what the hell? I'm like, did they get Comic-Con tickets? Because I hope not.
No, like with stuff like that, you can go to San Diego Comic-Cons and just be like. Like, find out who these people are, and if they got passes, they can be immediately revoked.
Yeah.
You can, if they threaten him online, that can be taken to the police.
Yeah, but I definitely hope that this panel is not happening at any time that I am also at a panel.
Oh, same. I want to go see it.
Because I definitely want to show my support.
Absolutely. Actually, the panel is on July 10th at, it's the Vertical Comics panel.
Wait, it can't be July 10th.
No, you're right, you're right. I'm so sorry. I am sorry, that's a typo. It's a Vertical Comic panel at San Diego Comic Con. It's Friday, July the 20th at 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. in room 23ABC.
Okay.
So it's probably a humongous panel.
Yeah.
Because it has, like, all the little ABC
right.
Rooms.
So I am going to be on a panel at 8 o'clock in room 23ABC.
Excellent.
So I will already be there. I'll be sure to be early so that I can see this panel.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And they kind of, like, are also kind of talking about, they're going to be talking about, like, the relaunching of the titles on Vertigo. Mm-hmm. And then... So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about the DC panel. It's been a while since I've been excited about DC, so very excited.
Yeah, I mean, because they basically DC consumed all of the old Vertigo titles.
Yeah.
And they're all now, even their reprintings are, say, DC on them.
Oh, wait, so boo. My panel's on Thursday. So yours is on Friday. Okay.
So it's... Yeah, it has to be a big room. This is a Vertigo relaunch. Oops.
Yeah, Mark Doyle, the Vertigo executive editor, Mark Doyle, said, "It's time to rebuild DC Vertigo. We're returning to our roots by spotlighting the most exciting new voices in comics, as well as bringing new voices to comics from the corners of television, games, music, activism, podcasting, comics, and more. All of our creators are passionate and have something to say. These sophisticated stories are amazing, new characters and vast worlds to explore." That's what it's always been about for me. So I'm very excited.
I want to talk quickly about jump off of your onto a tangent off of your talk about Charmed,
yes.
The reboot Charmed.
Yes.
It reminds me that there is a non-reboot TV show coming out called Brujas.
What?
What?
It
what?
Is a show about Afro-Latina witches.
Oh my god, I'm so in.
Yes, it's coming to TV, and it is going to be, I'm trying to read real fast if we can see when it's going to be coming out. But I saw this come out a while back, and I had meant to mention it. And I this article was written in January. So
sign me the fuck up.
Yep.
So it says, thanks to playwright Tanya Saracho, the Bruja movement, a subculture of Afro-Latina millennials reclaiming the elements of brujería, the Spanish word for witchcraft, will soon get its due on television. Deadline reports that the Mexico-born writer is developing a show called Brujas that centers around the Bruja movement in Chicago following four Afro-Latinas. The series is being produced by Big Beach, an independent production company responsible for films such as Little Miss Sunshine and Our Idiot Brother. So I think that might be all the information that we have so far. I don't know if there is a date of when... Oh, it says no release date or cast details have been released for Brujas, but whoever is cast in the four big roles will surely bring some much-needed visibility to Latino subcultures. But again, this article was written in January, so by now there might be some information, but that was the first article that came up when I searched it. So it says... The trailer... Oh, no, this is Charmed. So, that's all I see for it. So, hopefully, we get some more information about it soon. But, yeah, everyone is super hyped about the Charmed reboot with Latinas. But, I mean, this other one, I think, is going to be definitely something that probably is going to be a little bit more culturally significant.
Definitely,
very
yeah.
exciting.
Super exciting.
Yeah, I mean, because there's Santeria, there's mm-hmm. the Orishas. Mm-hmm. It's... Oh, my God. There's so many possibilities.
I used to love Orisha, the Rock and Espanol group.
Oh, I've never heard them. Yeah. I didn't even know that there was.
She's mentioned it before.
Yeah. And did I have the same reaction?
Possibly. Possibly. Yeah.
Every time I hear that word, it reminds me. Okay.
But on my radar is actually something by another podcast called The Adventure Zone, and I've mentioned this podcast before, but they have released their first graphic novel that is based on the first arc of their podcast, and it is The Adventure Zone, Here There Be Gerblins, and it is at your local comic book shop, and if they don't have it, you can pre-order it. It's been it's published by First Second, and I would say order it quick because supposedly they're already selling pretty quick.
So what is their podcast about?
So their podcast is about three brothers and a dad doing a D&D campaign.
Cool.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And you would think that is boring. Like, if you're not actually involved in playing and, like, doing, you know, rolling the dice and action or whatever, like, just sitting around watching, like, it sounds boring. Mm-hmm. I've never listened to it, but every freaking person I know that does says it's just amazing.
It's amazing. It's great. It's funny. It's action-packed. It's full of feels and everything. Like, when I was reading this, simply because now I know where the story goes, there were certain moments in this book that foreshadowed what was going to happen. And when I read it, I got a little misty-eyed because I know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the artwork and how they did it was perfect for that situation.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's really, really cool, and it's a way to support podcasters and stuff like that. But also, like, it's if you don't have time to listen to, because it's kind of a lot of episodes. It's like 80.
Oh wow!
It's like 60, and that's nothing.
We're almost there, girls.
and that's nothing compared to Critical Role, that is like on like almost like more than 1,000 episodes.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that one too.
Yeah, Critical Role.
1,000? Wow.
Yeah.
How old will we be when we hit 1,000?
Not 1,000. Okay, I'm probably exaggerating, but Critical Role has a lot of episodes, like up there in the hundreds.
Yeah.
Oh,
now we're at 100.
Hundreds. That's it. I was over exaggerating. But it's if you don't have time to listen to all of that, there's now a book about the first arc. It's about the first 10 or 15 episodes of that podcast.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Done in one book. And it's 20 bucks.
It's pretty nice size. I mean, you're getting your money's worth.
You're definitely getting your money's worth. And they have, like, fan art in the back and everything.
Oh, that's
as
cool.
Well. And so it's really cool.
Listen to that, fans. You got to step it up. Where's our fan art?
That's really exciting because mostly I see like people that have like their shows or are directors or are actors that they like branch out into podcasting.
Yes,
I've never seen an instance where podcasters launch a comic book. So I'm just like excited because I mean, you know, the possibilities of this are endless and the what is it called?
The Adventure Zone.
No, I mean, not that, but the quality of the book is really good.
Oh, yeah, it's First Second. First Second does some really quality work, and with everything from their, even how they, like, print it and everything. It's, like, a good paper, and the binding and everything is super, super cool, and how the artwork, the cover art that they've done is pretty good.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have thought that, like, it was inspired by a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
It's just, it's really cool. Thank you for bringing that in. I can't wait to read it.
It's really great. And they themselves have a lot of support, too, from some pretty big names.
Oh, wow.
Adam Savage from Mythbusters. Justin Roiland, the co-creator of Rick and Morty. John Hodgman from Vacationland. Hank Green, the YA author. Like, they have a lot of fans.
That's cool.
Very high prominent fans.
Wow.
Yeah.
Friends
in high places. Yeah. But no, it's really, really good, and I highly recommend it.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes. Kristen, take it away.
So, my Juntos y Fuertes this week, this episode, actually has to do with an event that's happening during Comic-Con. San Diego Comic-Con is next week. It's going to be July 18th, which is a Wednesday, which is preview night, all the way through the 22nd, which is Sunday. And happening concurrently to Comic-Con in San Diego is a little convention called 4th Annual ChicanoCon. ChicanoCon is a comics and music event that spotlights the work of Latino artists while bringing a little Comic-Con to the barrio. At ChicanoCon, they'll be giving away comic books to kids, creating costumes, and because this is a gathering made by and for Latinos, there will be tacos, woo-hoo, live music,
yes,
superhero piñata breaking,
yes,
and, of course, Latino artists.
Nice.
The event, which was started in 2015, will begin on July 20th at Border X Brewing in Barrio Logan, which is one of the little neighboring neighborhoods to right from where the convention center is. If you take the trolley south, it's like the first or second stop, I think. I think that's what I'm remembering correctly. But it is accessible by trolley. So Barrio Logan is where it's going to happen, and it's at a brewery. So, of course, you know that we will probably be there. But Barrio Logan is a historically Chicano community in San Diego that's just 2 miles, 2 miles east of the madness of where Comic-Con takes place. So the creator David Favela says comics and the popular arts are important to the Latino community and can play a role in children's lives just like they changed mine. He says he learned to speak English by reading comic books.
Oh, wow.
He says, while Comic-Con is an incredible event, there really isn't one place for all the Latino Chicano artists to connect and inspire each other. We try to create a space to do that, and we try to support these artists in their journey into the popular arts. It says, plus, Latino comic fans have a place to celebrate their geekiness and their culture. Even as Comic-Con does better to represent Latinos, ChicanoCon will continue to bring the Latino perspective.
Excellent.
So this will be happening beginning on the 20th and I believe through the weekend. So that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It says the hours are beginning at 1 p.m. On Friday and then through 8 p.m. On the 21st. I don't know. The dates seem – here the dates say 19th to 21st, but over here it says 20th to 22nd. So there's a little confusion, but there is a Chicano Comic-Con going on. I got this information from their Facebook event that they shared. You can just search 4th Annual ChicanoCon or Border X Brewing, which is the host. And I actually think that I saw Javier is going to be there. Javier Hernandez.
Nice.
Lalo will be there. I think Yehudi said he was going to be there. We haven't done his book yet, but we should.
Yes.
But there's going to be a lot of Latino creators that we have talked with on the show or whose work we have reviewed. So and it can only I wanted to go last year, but I got sick at Comic-Con last year and I just did not have it in me to travel outside of my bed to the convention center for a few things I had to be at. But I really want to try to go this year and kind of I think it'd be an amazing time to just meet other Latino artists and kind of get the word out about Comadres y Comics, and hopefully it is an amazing event this year.
Does it say what the cost is?
It's free.
I'm there. You said trolley accessible, and free. I'm still there.
Yes, I believe it's free. That's what it doesn't say that here, but in other places I've seen that it's a free community event, and also it is family friendly. Even though it's a brewery, it's family friendly. All ages are welcome.
Excellent.
So, here is a weekly calendar. It says, that's why. I think this was from last year. Someone shared something from last year. That's why the dates seem weird. So, that's why it was confusing. But it definitely is happening, because I've seen a lot of the creators saying that they're going and that they're going to be there having a table and stuff. So I definitely think that we should double check to make sure that it's free. It doesn't say here, but I want to say that I've seen that somewhere else.
Well, we'll definitely look that information up and post it on our Facebook page and possibly any other social media that we can actually blow this up on.
Definitely.
Hello, hello.
Hi, guys. We have a new segment called Saludos, and this is where we give listeners the opportunity to do a shout-out or ask us questions that we will answer on our next, on our when we record next. So we have two shout-outs on Instagram. One is from Richard Cardenas. He is from Interview with the Nerd podcast on the Awkward Human Network. And he says, which is your favorite pan dulce? Mine is pan francés con mantequilla y azúcar.
Oh, I like that one.
Yes. So what is your favorite pan dulce, guys?
My, this is Kristen. As a kid, my favorite was the empanada de calabaza. Mm. That was my favorite. But for some reason, as an adult, I don't know if my taste buds have changed or if it's just the paraderias up here have a different recipe. It's not the same to me anymore, and I don't know why, and it's very, very disheartening. But my second favorite, or maybe now it's my first favorite, I don't know what they're called, but they're the little red pinwheels that have coconut on the outside and then like frosting in the middle
with the jelly.
Yes, those are my favorite.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
So mine, I also don't know the name of them, mostly because I never bothered to ask. But they are the bright fluorescent pink ones that kind of look like squished flatbread, but they're super sweet and they have like layers of caramel in them. Not caramel, I think it's brown sugared.
Oh,
like
yes.
Brown
yes.
sugar. Then it's
sort of
like
they crumble, right?
Yes.
Oh,
it's kind
God,
of a
those
crumble.
Are good.
Those are really good. But that is my absolute favorite one. And it's my favorite now because it used to be conchas and everything, because that's what my mom would let me have. Because my mom expressly forbade me from having no more than one of those.
As opposed to the three conchas.
Three conchas. She had to compromise somewhere. So I could only have one of those whenever we would go to the panaderia. And I could only have half of it because she thought it was too sweet for me.
Wow.
Do you think it's because of all the brown sugar? Because I do remember it's really sugary.
Yeah, it's a lot of sugar. It's basically, it's diabetes in a bar.
Fond memories. So we didn't have to go to the panaderia. The panaderia came to us. Right. There was a truck that would drive through the neighborhood where my grandmother lived and would honk the horn. Aww. And you never saw a little brown Chevy girl run faster down a flight of stairs than when she heard that horn coming around the corner.
Pan dulce.
El pan. This is Sarah, and It varies, because in November I like pan de muerto.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But when somebody comes from El Pueblo in Tlatenango, I love my pan de fiesta.
Mm.
And that you can't really get here. I mean, there are some people that are starting to make it here, but
what is it?
It's kind of a long rectangular bread,
mm-hmm.
and it has like a browning on top with sesame seeds.
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, and then, but it's very long. It's sort, and then you can break it off into pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that one, they make really great one in Tlatenango, so every time somebody comes from the El Pueblo, then I'm like, did you bring pan? Pan de fiesta? ¿Trajiste pan? Okay, so, can I have just a little slice? Just a little bit.
Roscas. This is the Guatemalan one.
Oh, roscas,
They only make it during like big events, Semana Santa, Christmas, Dia de los Muertos, because they make pan de muerto, and there's also roscas. But basically, whenever there's a festivity, and they're just like mini roscas, and they're cooked until they're almost like a cookie, not like the consistency of like a dry cookie, but perfect with coffee.
Mm.
It's really really good.
Yeah, I think it's just inferred, for me anyway, that pan dulce is eaten by dunking it into coffee.
Yeah.
That's how I always grow up eating my pan dulce, no matter what it was. The cookies, the empanada, whatever it was, I had a cup of coffee, which was probably like a quarter coffee, and then the rest milk and sugar, and just dunking it all. And then the best part was drinking at the end with all the pieces inside.
And my favorite right now at this very moment that I can go out and get is a panaderia that is in Compton on Rosecrans. And it's, I think it's called San Marcos or San Martin, but they have these cuernos, but they are pink. And,
what is it about pink?
Yeah, but the way they make them, it's so delicious to dunk. I'm going to bring some for you guys, and you guys are going to love it. Anyway, those cuernitos are like my favorite right now. Like, if I'm full and I see a cuernito, I'm going to eat it. I'm going to eat it, and I'm going to sometimes my aunt buys them, and I sneak a little piece of the cuerno because her husband's like, did you eat my cuerno? Like, oh, shit, I just ate a little piece. So that's my favorite. He also asks, what's your favorite comic book? This is Sarah. My favorite, like, asking me what my favorite comic book is asking me to tell you who my favorite child is. But I'm gonna go out and say that my all-time favorite is Sandman. By Neil Gaiman.
So this is Kristen, and my all-time favorite, I think I've mentioned this before, is Why the Last Man. That book had me so emotionally invested. There were parts of it that, there were splash pages in it that just brought me to tears. I still love that story, and I am so excited for the TV show to come out. I always cross my fingers when these kinds of things happen, because when it's my favorite of anything and it's getting made into a different medium, I always get really nervous that they're going to ruin it. And there's no fantastical stuff to this one, so I'm hoping that it translates well. It's a post-apocalyptic story, so what I fear is that now that Walking Dead has been on for so long and people are kind of tired of it, and like there's a little bit of post-apocalyptic just being over it, I guess. I'm hoping that people give this a chance, because it's a different story and it's so worth watching and learning about. So Why the Last Man is my all-time favorite. You cannot go wrong with Brian K. Vaughan.
I'm a little stuck. It's either... No. The Wicked and the Divine is my all-time favorite. Because you said Sandman, and I didn't want to say Sandman as well. But I was just thinking, what else do I really like that I keep rereading? And The Wicked and the Divine is definitely it. It's like, it's written by Kieran Gillen and drawn by Jamie McKelvey. And it is basically Sandman, but with music. It's really good.
Okay. I like that.
I adore it. You can't go wrong with it. And I'm Jamie McKelvey's artist, but I really like The Wicked and the Divine. That one's my fave.
Excellent. All right, and we have one more saludo from iDraw, which is Nathaniel Osoyo, an artist. His shout out is to the Comadres for always being supportive and highlighting books that I should know about. #15.
Oh. And we also reviewed his book, The Shadow People Are Coming.
Yes.
So that a cool reality
comic book. Yeah. So salutations to you too, sir, and thank you for the shout out. And that was our segment. Saludos. We have some great news. Kristen, take it away.
We definitely do. If you're going to be at the San Diego Comic-Con 2018 next week, which is July 18th through 22nd, you are going to have the amazing opportunity to meet us in person at our very own panel. We will be on the Fanbase Press Latinx Comics Creators and Readers panel on Saturday, which is Saturday's the 21st, 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock in room 28DE. We have the amazing opportunity to be on this panel with Sebastian Kadlecik, who is the co-creator of Quince, and is going to be answering all of your questions and talking about his experience being a Latinx creator and his amazing book that we reviewed on one of our podcasts, Quince, all about Lupe, who gains superhero powers on the day of her quinceañera.
Yes, and the moderator will be Barbara Dillon,
yes,
from Fanbase Press. Mm-hmm. So we're very grateful to them, and we're excited to see you guys
so
at the
grateful.
Panel.
Yes.
So we hope to see you guys there.
And this is Kristen Still. If you have the opportunity to be there also on Friday, I'm going to be moderating a panel on Thursday. Oh, I said Friday, but it's Thursday. I keep mixing it up. I'm going to be sitting there in this room on Friday like, where's my panel? On Thursday, July 19th, it's going to be the Web Comics Advocates and Web Comics Gathering. As you might know, my husband does a webcomic called Collectors, all about Eddie, who loves his wife and his comic book collection, but not always necessarily in that order. I will be moderating the panel, so you can come and check that out. If you have any inkling that you want to create your own webcomic and you want to know how to do it and the best processes to get that creative juices flowing and to get your comic out in front of people, definitely I recommend coming to this panel. This panel is the panel that Eddie sat in. I remember sitting there next to him 5-6 years ago, and he was just a participant in the audience, and now he is part of the panel with his very own webcomic. So definitely check that out too.
Very exciting stuff, guys. Did you guys ever think you were going to be on a San Diego Comic-Con panel? Because I sure didn't.
I never even thought I was going to go to San Diego Comic-Con.
My first Comic-Con panel was last year, and I was so freaking nervous. It was my first panel ever. That
wow.
was my introduction to paneling.
Wow.
It was at San Diego last year.
I remember you were freaked
and
out.
And I was freaked out, and that day, it was a Saturday, I think. Or no, it was a Friday. Whatever day it was, I didn't go to the convention hall floor at all. I went straight, as soon as I got there that day, I went straight to the pro lounge, and I sat there at a table and just was writing out all my answers, because we got the questions ahead of time, mm-hmm. was writing out all my answers. I was even texting you guys, I think. I was like, I would message you, what do you guys think? What's a good answer for this?
Yeah.
I was so stressed out. Now, it's like, it's not that it's not a big deal, but I'm way less stressed about it.
Super
and
chill.
Yeah, and I enjoy it so much more, but that was like such a, like a nerve-wracking experience.
I'm nervous, definitely. I've been breaking out a lot because I'm so nervous, but I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very excited.
Super excited.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can fake it until like, we're there, and then I'm just all like, shit, what the fuck am I going to do? But fake it till you make it.
Nice. So we hope to see you guys there if you did get Comic-Con tickets. And if you're not, thank you for your support anyway. And hopefully next year, if we can possibly be at a panel again. I'm just so excited. I mean, this thing, I don't even know, I'm babbling.
Well, I think, and if you're not, we definitely should do our due diligence and just share as much as we can. Any panels we go to, any chisme that we hear, keep updating our social media channels so that it'll be like almost you were there with us.
Exactly. So they can follow us on Twitter, Jen?
At Comic Comadre, so you can tweet at us as well. Give me the latest dirt. Okay.
Yes, and on Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
You can also follow us on Facebook, of course, and I'll do my very best to post pictures and stream live video from the comic convention hall. Also, we are on Snapchat, and I'll try to do my best. Connection very good?
There's 50 million people that are trying to get on it, so it's super slow, but it does exist.
Excellent. So, yeah.
Pay your phone bills, people. Pay your phone bills.
So this has been episode number 34. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.